Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at MSA.
Hello, Jason Hovelman here with Engineering Training, No Exceptions Leadership Podcast. We're on both channels. Both of those are on iTunes, and you can catch these things on either site. So for whatever reason, EngineHouseTraining.com, No Exceptions Leadership website. So you just have to go to EngineHouseTraining.com or both of them on iTunes. And so we need your feedback, especially because of the contributions of who we have with us again today. He's a member of Engine House Training. He's a well-respected, well-known fire chief, Chief Dennis Riley. Chief, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me on, Jason.
All of the pleasure's all ours. You've got so many ideas and you've got so much experience when it comes to officer development and leadership. And quite honestly, I enjoy the podcast as much as far as learning from what you have to say as much as I like doing them. And I enjoy doing them. And you talk to some people, they'll tell you that I like to hear myself talk. But besides that, I like listening to all the things that you have to offer, because no matter how long you do this or how much experience you think you have, quote unquote, there's always so much more that you can put into terms of what we do on a daily basis that you can associate with certain events, situations, and you bring a lot of experience and a lot of situations to light that helps me along my career, and I'm sure everybody else, as far as what the feedback they provide, is they've been very complimentary of your work here. So thanks for joining us here.
Well, I certainly appreciate the kind words. I just kind of look at it that I've been real lucky in my career. You know, I've been around for a while. I hate to admit the fact that, you know, I got my AARP membership a long time ago, and I'm probably closer to drawing Social Security than I am away from it. But, you know, with that being said, I've been fortunate to end up in a lot of good situations, and those situations have really taught me a lot. And, you know, one of the things that really sticks with me is the people that took time to invest in me, to help me, to, you know, show me the way, to teach me and allow me to develop, really have an expectation that that knowledge is going to be passed on. And I say that to everybody right now. I don't care if you're, you know, the chief of a metropolitan department and you've got 50 years in the business, or if you're a firefighter with 1 year on the job. Sooner or later, someone's going to come along and they're going to have an impact on you. They're going to make a difference. They're going to show you something that's going to help you be a better firefighter. And part of that is the obligation that you're going to have to pass that on to the next generation. Because the things that I've learned, you know, was they were floating around firehouses when there were still horses in the stalls. And the reason why I know that is people took the time to pass them on to me. So now it's my turn to pass them on to the next generation. And, you know, 15 years from now, when I'm retired sitting on the beach, I'm hoping some of the people that listen to this podcast are going to be passing this information on to the next generation. And that's the one thing that makes us as strong as we are, being firefighters. And it's one of the things that makes us unique in this profession. And it really, you know, really gives so much to those who are in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly enough, I'm finishing up a project for Penwell right now. And one of the things I had to do was come up with some acknowledgments. And I would encourage anybody out there, no matter what your rank is, you don't have to be an officer or a formal leader in regards to having brass on your chest or shoulders. But anybody that's in the fire service that's gotten however far along you've gotten, whether you just got a job, whether you just got on a volunteer department, no matter what your status is, I would encourage you to, after you listen to this podcast, sit down, get a notebook out, and I think it's better to get a notebook out than to do it in front of a computer. And there, you can argue the fact, but if you have to do it on a computer, fine. But sit down and just think about from the day that you realized you wanted to join the fire service, or the day that you realized you wanted to take a leadership role in the fire service, or whatever your career is, wherever you want to apply this, and start writing down names of the people that influenced or impacted or helped you. Or, and it's not, you know what, I've got officers that drove me to not be like them, and officers that didn't give me consideration, or other firefighters that looked down on me, and those things were all motivators, and not in a, those aren't people that you think of as people that influenced you. But you start writing down the people that made you turn this direction, or made you turn this direction, they pulled the reins back on you a little bit. Write down those names and start seeing the amount of impact that others have on you and your career. And as you go through, it gets longer and longer. And like you said, Chief, it's easy to forget who some of those people are, or some of those situations are. And I think it's important to remember some of those.
Great piece of advice. I couldn't have put it any better myself. I think you're absolutely right there. And after you've been on the job for 20 years and 30 years, you start looking back over that list of names, and this is really going to come into focus, and it's going to be a tremendous help. I would absolutely encourage everybody to do that.
And you're going to find little pieces of them in the things that you do and say. And it's always interesting how you use those down the road. So anyway, today, yeah, go ahead, Chief. Sorry.
I'm absolutely telling you that I never thought it would happen, but yeah, I've become my father. You know, and
exactly.
I think when you think about it, everybody, you know, every man walking the face of the earth, sooner or later, he's going to come to that realization. You become your father, and in your professional life, who were your fathers? Who were your mentors? I mean, you're absolutely right.
That's a great point. We maybe do a whole other podcast on that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll put it on my list for sure.
All right, let's do it. So today, you had a great idea, and it's a concept that embodies a lot of things, but it really is important for all levels of the fire service to understand these things. And you've got it titled as the double-edged sword of loyalty.
Yeah, it really got me thinking, because Paul Combs has come out with a couple of cartoons lately about loyalty. I know Kurt Isaacson down at County Fire, put one of Paul's articles up about loyalty, and it really got me thinking. And the very first thing that I will say is that those guys are absolutely correct. They're absolutely on the mark. I totally agree with the work that's coming out about loyalty. I'm not here to be the naysayer. I'm not here to try to take the conversation in another direction. I agree with them, and they're absolutely right. But as a fire chief, as a leader, as a person who has people reporting to him, I hear about loyalty all the time, and there really is a double-edged sword when it comes to loyalty, because if you want loyalty and you expect loyalty, then you need to earn loyalty from these people you want it given to you from. And there's absolutely no doubt about that. It is a two-way street. It is a double-edged sword. And, that's what I really want to talk about sometimes.
One thing comes to mind when you talk about loyalty, see, it's addressed a little bit, but not in exactly the way I heard it. And if you listen to my podcast or taken any of my classes, you'll hear me reference a chief out of Washington in Jeff Johnson. And Jeff, I met him through the IAFC many years ago when I was on the Fire Life Safety Section Board of Directors. I just got really lucky to meet him. Preventative side, and just balance. But I met him, and I took some of his classes, and he talks about loyalty, and he talks about respect, manners. But he always says, as an officer, and he asked this question, and I started asking him in my classes, and I asked him, who gives you your authority? Who are you most loyal to? Because who gives you your authority? And of course, you always get different answers. And there's a huge amount of people that say, the members giving you authority. to people more succinctly and very well eloquently than I can provide is tells you no, the chief gives you the authority as an officer. The members you get respect from or return.
Yeah, I mean, I tell my officers and I tell our firefighters, you know, they're working out there in those fire hazards an extension for me. I mean, if an officer gives a firefighter a legal order and the firefighter doesn't follow that order, it's as if I gave it to him. And I tell officers, you know, think about that. I mean, go on out there and act as my agent in the firehouse, and I draw my authority from the people of the Sunrise Beach Fire Protection District. Those are the people that really give me my authority vested through the board of directors. I mean, I'm here to be the fire chief in this community. I work for Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They expect me to run this organization in a way that can provide them the service they need on the first day of their life. So I'm doing that for them. The officers in the firehouse are actually the extension of me to get that mission done for Mrs. Smith. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. Now, certainly you can't go out there, you know, like you're a lion tamer with a whip and a chair and expect to have a high-functioning company if you just treat people poorly. But they work for you. You work for me. We all work for the community. And we've got to kind of pull that focus in line so that we're really respecting both edges of that sword. And, you know, in the notes, and I'm sure going to go up on the podcast or with the podcast, I say a couple of things. Like, number one, yes, certainly there are bad leaders out there. No doubt. Every leader deserves respect, you know, that we would all want to get. Well, you got to earn it. But at the end of the day, there is an element of loyalty that even if you don't like that person, you got to give it to them. And one of the best pieces of advice a labor lawyer ever gave me to really kind of make me understand, you know, some of the, you know, conflicts to get into is that management always reserves the right to manage poorly. And sometimes they're going to make bad decisions. Sometimes they're going to get a bad leader. Look, that's the way it goes. You know, the deck gets shuffled and you get dealt a certain card. Sometimes it's not the best card. But there's still an element of loyalty that's got to factor into the way you look at things, because your ultimate loyalty is to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, who's going to call for your services. And you got to go out there and get, you know, you got to go out and fix your problems in a very tense, maybe life-threatening situation. Make critical decisions with an incomplete data set in a compressed time frame. And if you let some of this other stuff kind of factor in and cloud your judgment and your decision, what good is it going to do?
Some people concentrate so hard on disliking and not enjoying their time with a bad cat, with a bad officer. And you're right, they happen. And I always give two pieces of advice. Number one is do all you can to learn how not to do things. And that takes some work because you have to get past your dislike, your disgruntledness, your frustration, and your bitching and complaining about the situation. Take some time away, write down those things so that when you do get promoted, you don't fall into the same track, because it's easy to become a product of your environment. And the second part of that is that if you know, one of the things you do when you raise your right hand and take an oath is you take an oath saying you're going to be mission-driven, loyal to your department, loyal to your chief. Well, as I said earlier, that officer is an extension of the chief, whether you like that bad officer, that poor officer, and deservedly so, possibly. But if you're truly going to be loyal to your department, you're truly going to be loyal to the mission and everything else, you've got to show some loyalty even to the bad officers.
Yeah, you know, there are models of good behavior, and there, like you said before, there's models of bad behavior. So, you know, take what you get. I mean, if it's a good officer, emulate what they do well. If it's a bad officer, avoid what they don't do well. But as you know, you got to get back to that thing. Remember, loyalty is that two-edged sword, and the ultimate loyalty is to Mr. and Mrs. Smith when they call for us to come out and fix their problems. You know, what's going on in firehouse? How are you carrying yourself? How are you conducting yourself? How are you behaving? How are you making your decisions in the workplace that are, that's going to support that true loyalty we owe to the citizens? I think it's very important. You know, a lot of times if you bring that back into focus, you know, some of the stuff that we, you know, get wound up about, and some of the things that I think cause problems in the whole loyalty picture, when you bring that, you know, real sharp focus on mission back, those things go away. I mean, those things you realize, you know, that's not really that big a problem. It really kind of makes me laugh sometimes. People get so wound up about, well, they got a bad chief. And there's bad chiefs out there. Let's not beat around the bush. There's bad chiefs out there. But they get so wound up about, you know, a bad chief. But this person is assigned an engine 4. You know, he's in a substation. He doesn't see the chief. I mean, and there you go. There's a great example. Bad chiefs, they never make themselves available. They don't go out there and they mix. They don't go out and they mix with the force. And the people will complain that the chief doesn't come out and mix with the force, but he's a bad chief that they don't like. So, are you at that point where you're going to complain about everything? Don't worry about it. Let it go away. Don't let those feelings weigh on you day in and day out, because if they do, it's going to affect you at mission delivery. You may say it's not, but it's going to wear on you. So just don't do it. You're really turning your back on the people you really need to be loyal to, and that's the citizens.
Yeah, so we talk a lot here in the opening round about the firefighters, the lower level, and the loyalty to the officers, and the problems that we can have with bad chiefs and bad officers, and the loyalty that we need to provide to the community and the citizens that expect us to do what, basically to solve their problems when they call. What are some things that management can do? What are some things that firefighters, the lower rank level, floor level members should expect from management in order to earn their loyalty? What management's got some work to do here too, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in this talk, you know, the talk we're having today, in part, is geared to those people who aspire to move up. And part of what I want to do is I want to give you some of those tools that you can, you know, stick in that basket. In 10 years from now, when you get promoted, when you start, you know, gaining rank, you can pull that list out and look at it and say, okay, these are the things that I want to make sure I do. And the very first one, I think we all need to expect from the people we report to is fair and consistent treatment. You know, I want to be treated fairly. Now, it's really kind of funny because, you know, sometimes you have, you know, these conversations with people, with folks, and does fair mean that everybody gets treated the same? And I got to be honest with you, you can argue that on a philosophical standpoint, but we're all human beings, and, you know, we're not all going to be treated the same. What we want to make sure is that we're treated fairly across the board. And that comes to things like when you're being evaluated, is there a consistent standard that we're using? You know, is everybody compensated in accordance with the pay scale? You know, is anybody being shown preference for time off? Excuse me, all those type of issues. If we're being fair across the board, then we're being fair across the board. And what more can you expect? If you want your boss to make you a go-to person, then you got to go out and learn that. But as long as we're being fair, you know, that's an expectation. And then the second part of that, I say, is consistent. And if you're the boss, you don't want your firefighters saying to themselves, boy, I wonder what captain or what lieutenant or what chief is going to show up today. Now, they need to see when you walk through the door, they need to have a real good feeling of what what they're going to get. And I just tell everybody, hey, turn the clock back, and sooner or later you're going to, you know, remember the person you work for that had like five different personalities. And everybody, like I said, everybody's sitting out in the parking lot going, oh, I wonder which one's going to show up today. That creates problems. If I'm the leader, and that's the way I'm behaving in the workplace, then my expectations for loyalty, you know, probably aren't that high, because people aren't going to want to be loyal to a person like that. So fair and consistent treatment, number one.
Yeah, great advice. And I agree with the very first statement you said, is that fair is different from the same. And a lot of that kind of comes back to, you know, fair is that all the same parameters are met, all the same benchmarks are met, compensation, all of those things come into play. However, when it comes to treating people the same, it can be a little bit tricky because everybody's motivated a little bit differently. And usually when you're talking about fair and consistent treatment, you're talking about equal, you know, equal problems with equal solutions. But when it comes to day-to-day, like the coaching, counseling, you may treat people a little bit differently.
You know, I was a battalion chief, you know, with firehouses like this, so, you know, I used to look forward to going to dinner, you know, and going out there and meeting with companies, and there are firehouses that forced myself to go to, because that's just the way it is. I mean, if we don't acknowledge the fact that we're all human beings and we have these different feelings, we're not being too fair set. And I think one of the things that I talk about a lot is Thank you.
sometimes, you know, you are playing up job. Are you only in your body that you recognize? I'm not saying that,
as always, Chief, great stuff. And you've got one more there, what they should expect, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last thing is, professionals, the people we want in these organizations, the people we want in our command, want to be challenged. I mean, people, I think, are not looking for the easy way out. Firefighters know, professionals, they understand, the nitty of this job, and they want to be challenged. And if I'm a leader, if I challenge my people in a way that they can succeed, they're going to become loyal to me. And I think, and I really and truly think, that when you start breeding this into your organization, those people are going to want to demonstrate proficiency. I mean, if we work on a skill, if we work on a task, if we do, if we spend a bunch of money and a bunch of time and a bunch of effort developing capability, then as a fire chief, I go out there and I tell the folks, I want to see you guys do this. I want to see, I want to see the company perform. So I challenge them. I make them demonstrate that proficiency. They are able to perform at that level, and then I acknowledge it, and before you know it, things start going really well. It works. If you're not doing it now, try it. See what happens. And I absolutely guarantee you that it's going to work.
Yeah, and you put this list together really well, because you literally lead from one topic to the next, and it's really going well. And I agree 100%. The more you challenge and give your members the autonomy to meet that challenge, not micromanage them while they're doing it, the successes are theirs. And the more successes that are theirs that they own and that recognition is received for, the more proficient they're going to be, the better they're going to be, and the more eager they're going to be to continue to ask for more challenges and to accept more challenges, even when it's not fun.
I mean, I think if you want to build loyalty, this is the way, my experience, and it's just, my one set of, my set of experience, that works. I mean, that absolutely works. And try it, and what's really funny about this is you don't have to be a fire chief to do this stuff. You can be a lieutenant, newly promoted, and start working on the things on this list, and I guarantee you within 6 months, you're gonna have a solid company. And if you have one of those people that are not trainable and who are unwilling, you're going to show them. I mean, if you're doing all these things and you're doing them, the right way for the right reason and at the right time, if you've got a member who's not in tune with it, then there's a real question of, does this person really want to be? And the other thing, too, that I say to officers, especially young officers, you do these things, and if you've got that problem person on your company, a lot of times the company is going to take action. You're not, you may eventually have to do something on the formal side, but if you're running your company like this and you've got somebody who keeps on pushing back, the company itself is going to want to handle this, because the vast majority of folks, like I said, are here because they're driven professionals. They want to be successful. So you've got to be to an extent and operate. And when you do that, it's going to work. I mean, it's really kind of simple.
Yeah, So for firefighters looking for what management needs to offer, for managers wondering what your role is, fair and consistent treatment of all members, have genuine concern for your well-being and development of those members, but at the same time, give them the tools and support that they need. Don't just throw them to the sharks and leave them. And then understand that your members want to be challenged, and they want to be able to demonstrate to you that they've accomplished these things and are proficient. And that leads us into what leaders should expect of their members and their firefighters.
Sure. You know, the number one thing I put up there, and you know, believe me, I'm not the smartest guy out there. I get a lot of my stuff from a lot of good people. Mark Van Alpert from Fully Evolved has his big report. And the very first thing he says is do your job. And, you know, as a leader, as a fire chief, as a superior officer, that's the number one thing I want. You know, I want you to do your job, learn your job, and do your job. Because our job is critical to Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And there's a lot of fire, you know, there's a lot of people that get themselves in line, and, you know, well, management's not loyal to me, and blah, blah, and all this drama and crap goes on and on and on. And I always, you know, the first thing I look at is you know, is that person a proficient firefighter? Is that person a proficient officer? Is that person a proficient chief officer? If they're not, they're not doing their job. So why should everybody bend over backwards to be loyal to them if, in essence, they're not being loyal to our profession?
And we'll put a link up to Mark's website. It's fine, real easy. And the chief has spelled that out. Mark went up and fully involved. And we'll highlight that so you can link Mark's stuff because it really is fantastic. And you're not going to find there's a lot of information stuff out there. Mark is exceptional. I would put him and Frank Vescuso as two of the top ones in our industry right now. A lot of really excellent other leaders that talk to, and I'm not knocking them for by any means, but you always, no matter how many times you see them, read them, or talk to them, their message always resonates. You always come away with so much valuable stuff. And you talk about there at the end of that segment that about do your job is about they expect the department to be loyal to them. And you want them to be loyal to the department, but it kind of goes back to number two on this list, right? It's a huge one.
Yeah, you got to be engaged. You know, once again, Mark said, be all in. You got to be engaged. If you're coming here just to be a clock puncher, you're going to show yourself for what you are. If you're here just because the schedule is great and you get health care, you know, you're going to show yourself for what you are. And if that's the case, then every organization has that. But don't expect the organization to bend over backwards for you. You know, we need people engaged. We need people who are ready to roll up their sleeves. I have a small organization here. We're 17 in operations. We're getting ready to go up to 19 next year. I mean, it's a small organization. I can't carry the load all by myself. I need people in firehouses making good decisions. Now, I would say that in my day, I was a good solid company officer. I spent a lot of time on engines, and I spent a lot of time on heavy rescue. But I got promoted 20 years ago. I mean, I had not ridden on an apparatus on a regular basis in 20 years. So when it comes time to make some decisions about nozzles or tools or hose or thermal imaging cameras, what type of, you know, technology do we want to put on the rigs? What do we want to do for NDT? I can't answer those questions because I don't have that expertise. I need folks out there riding on this rig to tell me what that best choice is. And that means I need people engaged. I mean, I see firefighters all the time, all over the country. They come to work and they don't really care. Whatever they give us, they give us. I mean, that's their attitude. Well, that's not helping anybody. So we need folks who are engaged. And I'll put a plug in for Mark. He's coming to Sunrise Beach in May 15. So we've already got that confirmed. Keep your eyes on our website and our Facebook.
Fantastic. I hope it's a day that I'm off. come down and visit both of you. You know, we had a member.
It would be great to have you.
Yeah, I'd love to sit in there. I'd love to sit in there. You know, going back to the engagement part one. If you're the member that when things come up and you're go-to answer is, well, hey, you know, I've been a good employee here. I've never caused any problems. I come to work every day. That's not engagement. That's like your contract. That's what you're supposed to do. That's expected, right? Engagement is doing the extra things, looking for initiative and to do those extra things, that not because of for reward and so that you can tell everybody about it, because that's your loyalty to the department. And when you don't do those things that you just mentioned, it leads you right into number three.
Absolutely. You got to respect the craft, and you got to respect our profession. I mean, when you come here to our fire headquarters, you got antiques hanging on the wall. You know, we're looking for historical pictures. I mean, so we have a proud tradition in the fire service. I mean, there are very few trash companies that have pictures of trash trucks dating back 200 years. But we can easily find pictures of firefighters on fire apparatus fighting fires. So that's our profession, you know, and so our craft is being able to perform extremely difficult tasks in highly charged, life-threatening situations. And you don't learn how to do that, and you don't master that craft by sitting around watching YouTube. It doesn't happen. I mean, as much as you might want to, it doesn't happen. To get to that level of mastery of skills is hard. It takes years. It takes years. It takes years. It takes years. And those are the things that I look for in firefighting. And when you show me that, then, you know, you have earned my loyalty. And I will get out of my way. I will move heaven and earth to support you, to make sure you're taken care of, to make sure you've got all the tools you need to do. And now we've taken one off of the leader list, and we've tied it right back to the firefighter list, and we've clearly shown that's how you build loyal organizations, and it's that choice.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about the master tacticians, the people that I look to, that everybody else looks to, when we talk about the true tacticians of our profession, I think of Mike Dugan, I think of Bill Gustin, I think of Kurt Isaacson, I think of Daryl Liggins, I think of all these different names that you can think of, both current and past, Vinnie Dunn. All the names that you think of practically, operationally, they didn't get that name by sitting in a firehouse and just running calls. That experience wasn't solely gained. In fact, I would argue that most of that experience, most of that knowledge, most of that tactical prowess was gained by going out on the downtime and learning their craft and being professionals at what they do.
I'm good friends with a guy named Danny Murphy, and he was a retired lieutenant in FDNY. And Danny tells me when he was a firefighter on Rescue 2, he worked for Ray Downey, and everybody on Rescue 2 would just they would just shake their hands if they got a call at 3 o'clock in the morning down by the Navy Yard, because they knew Ray Downey was going to make everybody get into work. Rescue 2 was a scuba company, and if they were anywhere near the Navy Yard, it didn't matter if it was 3 in the morning, it didn't matter if it was 30 degrees out, whatever. They would go, they would clear the run, they would go down to the Navy Yard, and they would get into work. And with that being said, those guys that worked for Ray Downey at Rescue 2 during that period of time were the best guys in the New York City Fire Department. And how did they get there? They went there at 3 o'clock in the morning when it was 40 degrees out, because Ray knew that would be the make or break. One of these days, they were going to have to go in the water when it was 40 degrees out. And the only way they could be prepared to execute their mission was to have to be great divers sitting in the tank. And you know, beyond that, some of the best public safety drivers. You know, they were working on Ray Downey's command at Rescue 2. And that's how they did it.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I like to run. Funny, some friends of I have started another podcast that we talk about running, but we were talking about training. And it's really synchronous with what we're just talking about right now. Is if you want to get good, whatever you're doing, and I don't remember who the quote was from. It was a runner. This was not a firefighter, but I'm sure somebody in the fire service has said the same thing in one form or fashion or another. But if you really want to get good at what you're doing and you want to get better at your craft or your, especially in the fire service at 8 o'clock in the morning, do the things that you should be doing when you don't want to do it. That's when it's a struggle. That's when it's going to be a challenge. That's when it's not fun. That's when it's not, nobody's watching. There's no more. But when you least want to do it, when it's the least opportunistic, when it is the most inconvenient, that's when you need to do it. And you don't want to get out of bed and go for a run. Those are the days you have to go for a run. And I think it's the same in the phone. And that goes straight to number four on your list, because it's all about, you may not want to go do that with Chief Downey at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you may hate doing it, but there's a reason for that, right?
Absolutely. And the leaders have the right to make a decision. And if you're a subordinate in an organization, the leader has a right to make that decision. And you got to respect that right now. They may not make the right decision all the time, but at the end of the day, you've got to respect that right. Because if I have a firefighter that wants to question every decision that I make, and there's a difference between asking questions and questioning my decisions. That person who questions my decisions is showing they're not loyal to me. They're just not. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, five trumps zero or one or two or three or four. And I don't, and I'm not the type of guy that likes to flaunt that, but it's true. I mean, this is not ancient Greece where we all sit around and we get the vote. Part of what we have to do is we've got to empower our leaders, and we got to trust our leaders to make decisions, because if we don't make decisions, nothing gets done. And, you know, if you want to question and challenge all the time, all it's going to do is create friction, and it's going to detract from that cohesive team. And I just try to remember, sometimes I disagree with my board, and sometimes the board makes a decision that I don't like. But you know what? That's just the way it goes. They have the authority to make that decision. I've got to respect, you know, their right and not let that affect what I'm going to be thinking about at 3 o'clock in the morning when I got to make those critical decisions on the fire ground.
Yeah, so just to recap before we move on to the next section, what your leaders should expect as a firefighter is they want you to do your job. When everybody wants you to do your job, including the people that you serve, and you raise your right hand to protect. And I always tell people, after they've been, the first year is gold. You know, it's a honeymoon. You can get them to do anything, and they're happy and with a smile, whether they really are happy or not. And after that is when you start seeing some true colors show through. And I always ask, when you raised your hand and swore, was the word accept in any of that? Because it wasn't accept when I'm tired, accept when I'm grumpy, accept when we've ran them five times today, or whatever the exception might be. That was never in the oath, you know. And number two is, we want you to be engaged in the organization. We want you to respect your craft and our profession, because it's a reflection on all of us. You have to respect the right of a leader to make decisions. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but you have to have that respect for that and to ask questions, but not question how things get done, because like you said, that's a good way to log jam anything getting done in the fire service. Which takes us to your last section, which is, so when leaders are not loyal, what do you ask? What do you say?
Well, the first thing is, I think you got to turn it inside and say, why do I think like that? You know, why do I think that the leader is not loyal to me? And if you're going to go through that checklist, pull this piece of paper out and go through the checklist. You know, is that leader fair and consistent? Well, yeah, he really is. You know, have they done anything to help you develop? Well, yeah. You know, do they support you? Do they give you, the tools you need? Go down through this checklist and figure out why, you don't think the organization is being loyal to you. And if it's, for something that's, really not objective, it's subjective or it's just self-serving, then, then maybe it's not the organization. Maybe it's not the leader. Maybe you have a part in what's being given back to you. So, think about that. Another thing that I say on there is exactly what did the leaders do to make you feel that way? Can you put your finger on it? I wasn't the fire chief here. I was a chief officer in another organization. And I had a guy say, I don't really like the way you manage a certain thing. And I looked at him, I said, well, give me an example. So the guy looks at me, he goes, well, I can't really give you an example. But let me think about it. Well, you've come to the conclusion that you don't like the way I manage this particular project, but you can't point to where you have the heartburn. I basically looked at the guy and said, well, when you come up with a reason, let me know. And I just kind of walked away and I didn't give it a second thought. So if there's a loyalty issue, if you think there's a loyalty issue, then you should be able to point to specifics. And if you can't point to specifics, then maybe it's a perception and a subjective issue that rests more with you than with the leader in the organization. Maybe not. Maybe they're just, an all-around a-hole, and you can't put your finger on a specific. But a lot of times, if there's not a specific there, then a lot of it may be resting with you.
Yeah, I've had similar circumstances. The one that comes to mind was I was accused of favoring certain. We have different tiers in our organization, and I was accused of favoring one over another when it came to certain scheduling issues. And I was like, okay. I said, if that's the case, I need to know some specifics so I can make sure I change those things. And guess how many specifics I got?
Yeah, you get the blank stare. Oh, I see the deer give me the same look when I drive by at night and I hit him with the headlight.
I'll give the guy credit. He after I made that comment, he said, well, maybe it's just the way I'm looking at it. So
yeah,
I'll give him credit at least to that end. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Another thing that I put on my list is, when you get in these situations, you got to ask yourself, can I help them make things better? I mean, the fire department's not loyal, or the fire chief's not loyal to me, or, whatever the example is. And, sometimes when you go back through the list, you kind of look and you realize that there's a double-edged sword here and that you may very well have created some of this problem. And if you have, how can you fix it? I mean, face it. Anybody in a subordinate position, put yourself in the leader's position. Do you want people around you that make you mad all the time? Do you want people around you that question you all the time? Do you want people around you that you constantly have to go back and say, hey, did you get this project finished? No, I'm working on it. Well, the deadline was 2 weeks ago. Oh, well, we were real busy. What are you doing on your end that, has got some bearing on this? And, sometimes you got to take a hard look in the mirror. Listen, I'm not perfect either. And I have had to go back to some of my subordinates and say, look, I really bungled this whole whatever situation. I flew off of the handle. I misspoke. I rushed to judgment. I didn't do this or I didn't do that. I got to go back and eat crow. I've had to do that with five trumpets on my collar. Those types of things happen. So I think if you get yourself into one of these situations, turn the mirror back on yourself and say, is there something that I can do to help make this better?
Yeah, we can send a company into an unknown challenge with no obvious solutions. And given enough time, they will not leave that until they figure it out. But yet, we can't solve some of the simplest things in the firehouse without just completely complaining about it and griping about it instead of putting effort into fixing it.
Yeah, you know, I watched two guys almost come to blows about the dishwasher, about not emptying the dishwasher. And I walked over, I opened up the dishwasher, there were like five plates in it, you know, and a handful of silverware. And I looked at these guys, I said, well, wait, what are you two guys, morons? You're getting ready to piss your career away over five plates and a half a dozen forks? Just put the damn stuff in a cabinet and don't worry about it. And they just kind of looked at me like, you're kind of right, Cap. Why let the little things, turn into a big thing? How can I help make this better? Hey, if I'm in a real heated exchange with somebody about emptying the dishwasher, when do I become the adult to realize, okay, this isn't going to go anywhere, and we're just going to, both get in trouble. Why don't we just go into the dishwasher?
Hey, you take two plates, I'll take three.
Yeah. I mean, anything. I mean, what really makes me laugh sometimes is you talk to folks and we solve problems for a living. Mrs. Smith does not call us because she did, the best thing in the world. More than likely, Mrs. Smith had a bad day and she probably made a bad decision and we get involved in it. We go out there and solve our problems. But we go back to the firehouse and the dishwasher is a huge crisis. I mean, come on, what are we talking about here? Sometimes I think we just need to have that little voice of reason on a tape recorder. Hey, think about this real hard. And, the last thing I have on my list, and I've got a really great story, if we have another minute or two, is, I tell people when you're in these situations, focus on your skills. I mean, focus on your skills. It's easy to be a critic sitting in a recliner. I get a buddy of mine, he's going to an assessment center, and they give him this really charged personnel situation where they got two guys in a kitchen arguing about abortion. And this was in the South, in a Bible Belt state. And that's a real hot button issue. And, they wanted to see how this guy was going to handle the whole situation. They did the assessment in a firehouse. And right before the assessments, as they get into the assessment, my buddy says, well, can I go out in the bay for just a second? And the assessor goes, yeah. Didn't really know what was going on. So my buddy goes out. He knows the firehouse. He opens up the rig. He gets two pieces of utility rope. It comes in. He throws them on the table. And he tells the guys, when you can tie a bowline behind your back with your eyes closed, you can start arguing about abortion. But until you can do that, you're a fireman. Work on your skills. I don't want to hear any more of this.
That's a great story. And it's a great way to blow off frustration. It's a great way to lead. That's a great story.
He ended up on that one problem and the way he handled that. And this is a sharp guy. He was going to end up being number one on the list anyhow. But he just blew everybody else out of the water. And you know what? I know that guy, and I've known him for a while, and I know people who've worked under his command. And what he did in that assessment is exactly the way he ran his company. And one of the things, and this kind of, shoots off on a tangent for a little bit, but I tell everybody, a mark of a good officer are nobody wants to leave your command and everybody wants to come to your command. If you're running your company and you can say that nobody wants out and everybody wants to come here, you're doing the right thing. You're swinging for the fences and you're hitting a grand slam every time you come up to bat. And the guy that I just told the story about, that described him to a T. The only time people left his company is when people got promoted off. And anytime there was a promotion, somebody from his company got promoted. And that's the only way that you went to his company. Just think about that. Just think about that. And if you're a company officer, and even if you're in one of these bad situations like we talked about, last month, or if you're in this situation where you don't think your chief is being loyal to you, okay, you got a bad draw. What can you do with the company to kind of make that better? What can you do to make your company that haven? I've had some bad chiefs before when I was a company officer. I had, bad battalion chiefs. And I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, one of the battalion chiefs, he was horrible. I felt it was my duty to make my company the safe haven for the people I had under my command. You know, when you start thinking about that, you start acting along those lines, you're going to be the person that brings true value to your organization. And, you know, bad leaders, this is the other thing that really makes me, and there's so many tangents here, but this is another thing that makes me laugh. You know, I talk to, you know, young company officers, you know, guys maybe 32, 34 years old, and they're just pissing and moaning about their chief. Oh, my God, this guy is an a-hole. This guy is horrible. This guy's a jackass. This guy's whatever. And I look at him and go, how old is the guy? Oh, he's 64. Okay. You think he's going to be the fire chief when he's 90? He's going to retire. He's on his way out. More than likely, you're working in a situation where they may have a mandatory retirement. The guy's going to be out of there in a year. Oh, he's not loyal. He treats us like hell. Well, he's going. Don't worry about it. You're scheduled, if you're on shift work, you're scheduled to work 120 days a year. Take some vacation time. Before you know it, he's gone, and you get a chance to hit the reset button. Hope that you get it, you know, hope that the next one's going to be better. And more than likely, they probably will be.
Yeah, and like you said, be the buffer. You know, take the heat to keep it off your crew by keeping things light and active and progressive in your own house, because that chief's not coming around your house every day.
No, no. I mean, I was talking to somebody not too long ago, you know, a week or two ago, another person in another organization, and they were having a tough time with their chief and all this other type of stuff. I said, where are you stationed? He goes, oh, I'm out at Engine 4. I go, how often does the chief go out there? He says, yeah, we see him like once a month. Okay. So you see him once a month. You know, why are you worried? You know, what are you worried about? Oh, you know, well, sometimes, well, you know, load you guys up and go. I talked to another guy. He was at headquarters. And he really just, you know, couldn't get along with his chief. Nobody liked him. I said, load you guys up and go out and do a pre-plant. Load you guys up, go out and do a block inspection. Load you guys up, go out to a vacant building, throw ladders for a little bit. Do they restrict you from movement? And the guy says, no, you know, as long as we're available, you know, we're in service, we're in our first due, we can go anywhere we want. Well, don't sit around firehouse and dwell on how unloyal this guy is to you. Focus on how loyal you need to be to your crew and how loyal you need to be to your citizens. And let that be the thing that drives you. You'll end up out of the station most of the day. And, you know, by the time you come back, the guy's gone home. Okay, well, yeah, I survived another day. Sometimes that's what you got to do, survive another day.
And, Chief, I think you wrapped it up eloquently right there. That's an exact – I don't know that you could have explained the double-edged sword of loyalty better than in that last example of, hey, you know, your chief may not be loyal to you, but you need to be loyal to your members, and your members and you, the company, needs to be loyal to the community. And that's a great example of how to do that. And the show notes are going to be up. We'll put them at the show notes just like we do everything else. We'll get the links up to Mark Von Oppen and Frank Viscuso, and try to anyone else we mentioned, we'll try and get links up to their work. Chief, real quick, how can people get a hold of you if they've got questions or need some advice?
Yeah, no problem. Let's see. The email is real simple. It's dreilly, R-E-I-L-L-Y, at SBFPD, and that's the first letters of Sunrise Beach Fire Protection District, and where.org. And that's really the best way. I mean, shoot me an email. I mean, my email's coming to my phone. Got any questions? Whatever you need, just shoot me an email, and we'll get a hold of you. And we can talk some more, or we'll give you some ideas, or whatever you think we can do to help you.
Fantastic. And, Chief, thanks again for coming on with a great topic. I think it's going to help a lot of people. It's going to give people that little shove, that little nudge to keep going, especially if they're in some of these difficult situations. And it may make somebody stop and think about what they've been doing to maybe change something that they're going through, and they might be part of the problem and not the solution. And sometimes we get lost in that fog. It's easy to, but I think the things you talk about here are great. Just want to thank you for coming on. For all you listening, again, check us out at enginehousetraining.com. We're on Facebook. No Exceptions Leadership is also on Facebook at The New Fire Officer. And we're on iTunes. Both podcasts are on iTunes. This uploads to both. So if you're subscribed to one and not the other, we'd prefer you to be subscribed to both. But we simulcast this basically. And if you've got a topic that you want us to talk about or you want the chief to address on the podcast, just shoot us an email at enginehousetraining.com and or leave us a Facebook message and we'll get it covered. I'm sure between the resources we've got with EHT and Chief Riley, we'll get it taken care of. So, Chief, thanks again for coming on.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And hope everybody's having a good summer, and we will see you soon. Take care.